Ohio Bell, the telephone company, presents The Ohio Story. Years ago, Ohio gave up a heroine. Mad Ann Bailey had always been ours. She helped pave the way for the settlement of Ohio. Her magnificent wild ride had become part of our folklore, and it earned 3 glowing pages from our most beloved state historian, Henry Howe. She lived among us for years in Gallia County, and she died among us in 1825. Her grave was one of our cherished historical shrines. But on October 5th, 1901, a delegation of determined West Virginians stomped across the border to give us an argument about Mad Ann Bailey. And when they were through talking, we had to yield in justice. So on October 10th, 1901, the West Virginians took her back to their side of the river at Point Pleasant, leaving us with only an empty grave and tonight's Ohio story.
That was Robert Waldrop beginning another Ohio story, brought to you by Ohio Bell, the telephone company. Now that spring is here, with building materials and services more readily available, many folks are planning alterations to their homes. Often such changes and additions involve walls, flooring, and yes, telephone wires. May we say right here that that is a job for trained experts, for telephone people. And may we add, it's a job Ohio Bell experts will gladly do for you. So if your alteration plans involve the moving of telephone wires, either permanently or temporarily, call the Ohio Bell business office and ask for expert assistance. Our skilled technicians will move wires out of the way and return them to permanent locations so that you won't risk any interruption of your telephone service. And now back to Robert Waldrop and tonight's Ohio story, Mad Ann Bailey's Empty Grave.
On October 10th, 1774, by the fireplace in a cozy West Virginia cabin of the better class, half logs, half boards, a woman sat weaving and listened.
Hello, Ann.
It's my husband. They got him.
Yes, Ann. They got him and his whole crew. Point Pleasant's a ruin.
On November 15th, 1774, a youthful-looking rider galloped up to the drop gate at what would soon be Fort Clendenin, Charleston, West Virginia, and dismounted. The newcomer wore a buckskin coat to just above the knees and fringed leather trousers that tucked into a moccasin-like boot. The feet were small. A British-make rifle slung diagonally across the back of the stranger, who asked for the commandant.
I'll see sharpshooter enlistments are open. What's your target record?
10 out of 10 for 5 starts out of 7.
Speed?
About 1 a minute from standing, 2 minutes for shot mounted.
Well, you'll be in Sergeant Buttrick's crack squad. Now, you understand, son, once you sign this muster, there's no change in your mind about staying.
And once you sign, there's no change in yours about having me.
Well, don't you worry about that. Here's the ink. That's fine. Now, you'll billet with Company B.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't do that, Colonel.
You what?
Well, Here, I'll take off my hat.
Shades of Victoria, it's a woman. Now, look here, young lady. This is no place for pranks. You may leave.
Not till my enlistment's up, Colonel. We signed a deal. Remember?
From 1774 to 1785, the widow Ann Trotter rode the frontier as messenger, scout, and riflewoman. She established a reputation for marksmanship and horsemanship that endeared her to the whites and petrified the red men, who called her Mad Ann. In 1785, she married Colonel John Bailey, who was assigned to Fort Clendenin at Charleston, West Virginia. And Mad Ann lived there, too, not just as the colonel's wife, but as a member of the garrison. It was in the autumn of 1791 that Mad Ann rode back into the fort at Charleston with greater haste than usual.
What's the rush, Ann?
Close that gate after me, Sam, and get set. They're coming. Colonel Glendinning, Captain Marsh at Point Pleasant said to tell you that Mingo attack they were expecting up there has shifted south and is heading for us.
Are you sure, Ann?
Listen.
Wilson, blow call to arms. Buttrick, get me my company commander. Francis, issue extra ammunition for siege condition.
The Mingos stormed in and swarmed around the little fort. For 2 days they kept it up, and with each attack, the fire from the fort became less concentrated. It became spotty and ragged, and for good reason.
Oh, never mind whose fault. The fact remains we're down to 6 cases of shot and a half a keg of powder. Now, how long will that last us, Sam?
At this rate, Monday morning.
Then I've got to get powder and a shot mold from Point Pleasant before Monday morning. Townley, can you get your squad through?
Well, yeah. Out of the 9 of us, 1 or 2 might make it.
Colonel, out of this whole outfit, I know those trails best. It's my regular message.
I'm willing, mind you. If you're willing to lose my 9 men.
Yeah, we know, Sam. But it's settled.
Well, man, that was different. Now it's a case of...
Sam, you kick up a big disturbance in the south wall, and I'll make a dash out the north gate. When I come back, I'll wear a white bandana. When you see it, open that gate fast.
Inside the fort, Mad Ann Bailey galloped toward the north gate. It opened, and she flew through it, across the clearing and into the brush. She kept to the high ground east of the Kanawha River and galloped north. She covered 40 miles before dusk, and the next evening she rode into Point Pleasant. Ah, but that was the easy part. At Point Pleasant, they gave her a fast pack horse and strapped 4 saddlebags on it. On her own horse, Liverpool, she strapped 2 saddlebags. Each of the 6 bags was 3/4 full of powder. The top quarter was decoyed with a layer of Bibles. The 80-mile return trip was the worst part. She cut cross-country from Point Pleasant and picked up the east bank of the Kanawha River again at Fraser's Bottom. Straggling Mingos from all directions were traveling south in small bands to join the fight at Charleston, and she managed to avoid all these until she reached a place just downstream from Philoa. 2 Mingos on shaggy ponies picked up her trail and gave chase. The big black stallion splattered over the muddy trail and crashed through shoulder-high underbrush, dragging the pack horse behind him. Both mounts were terrified, and so was Ann.
They can't hit us, boy. On you go!
She couldn't shake off the 2 Indians, nor could she fire back while managing the 2 horses. She raced on toward the canal. At the brink of the river, she halted so suddenly the horses almost foundered. She dismounted and threw her hat on the water where it floated. She grabbed the terrified pack horse by the bridle and turned him north, parallel to the river. She whipped him across the haunches almost cruelly, and he galloped out of sight, terrified. Next, she turned Liverpool south and flicked him with a rawhide.
Sorry, boy. Get going now. Out of sight.
She unslung her rifle and dropped into the brush. As her pursuers approached the riverbank, she placed 1 ball in her rifle and laid another handy beside her.
Him go north.
Oh, out.
Headpiece in the river. Him go straight across. We follow.
Ann Bailey rose to 1 knee and fired. 1 Indian dropped into the stream. Quickly she reloaded. The 2nd Indian turned his horse in midstream. Ann Bailey shot him at the shoreline. She jumped onto one of the Indian ponies and raced south. When she found her mystified and panting Liverpool, she next rounded up her pack horse and continued toward Charleston, keeping the extra Indian pony in tow. She had other troubles, too, but Sunday night found her 3 miles outside the fort. between her and the fort were the Mingos, resting between attacks. She couldn't get through at night because the men in the fort wouldn't be able to see her white bandana, and they wouldn't open the drop gate. She dared not wait till full daylight, or the Indians would recognize her, and unless she could dress like an Indian, join the inevitable early morning Indian attack on the fort, and get so far out in front that she could be let through the gate in time for them to close it again behind her. Before dawn, Anne Bailey opened Liverpool's saddlebag and took out a white rag and a blanket. She wrapped the blanket around herself, Indian fashion. Far away in the fort, she heard reveille blow. She wondered if she'd ever live to hear that bugle close up. She waited for daylight to break. Inside the fort, the lookouts remained alert.
They're getting ready now. I can make them out, mountain horse.
Fire, they're going out.
All right, get set for attack along the north wall, and remember to stay alert for Anne Bailey. Say, look, that redskin with the blanket, riding like fury and leading a pack horse. He's way out ahead of the others. Hey!
It's Liverpool!
Some red devil stole her horse.
No. Hold your fire! It's Anne Bailey with the powder. Stand by to open that north gate!
Yes, Mad Anne Bailey made it with the powder. She saved that fort, Mad Anne did, all by herself and her two horses. When things quieted down, she moved to Ohio, near Gallipolis. She lived near her son in Ohio until she died on November 22, 1825. She was buried on a hillside near Gallipolis, Ohio, and she became part of our folklore. But on October 5th, 1901, when a group of West Virginians came across the border to claim her, in justice, we had to let her go back to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, to the soil she had shared with her first husband, leaving us with only an empty grave and a heroine's chapter in the Ohio story.
And now, before we close the Ohio story, here is Robert Waldrop with his Ohio Belle brevity.
They had recently moved from their hometown of Sewickley, Pennsylvania, to Toledo, Ohio. They hadn't made many friends yet, and their evenings, Saturday nights in particular, were apt to be a little lonesome. One Saturday after dinner...
Penny, for your thoughts.
I was just thinking. If we were home now, we'd be playing cards with the gang.
Yeah. I wonder where they are tonight.
It's Jim and Betty. She wrote and said she was having the crowd this week.
Good old Beth. Say, I got an idea. Let's call them up. We can talk to the whole gang.
Oh, honey, let's. I'll place the call right now.
And so once again, the long-distance telephone banishes distance between friends and brings happiness. And the cost is so reasonable. For instance, a long-distance call from Toledo, Ohio to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania costs just 80 cents plus tax.
Ohio Belle will bring you Robert Waldrop in the Ohio story again Wednesday evening at this same time, when we tell the story of the beginnings of the internationally famous May Show of the Cleveland Museum of Art. Listen Wednesday for Art is for Everybody. The Ohio Story, brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at this same time, is produced by Stuart Buchanan. And tonight's Ohio Story was written by Frank Seidel and Bill Ellis. Original music by Earl Rawl. Facts are authenticated by the Ohio State Historical Society. Until Wednesday at this same time, this is Tom Field saying good night for Ohio Belle. This is a special network of Ohio radio stations.